This is Patsy with a Z. And I am back with my next guest, Norman Solomon. The name of his book is War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Norman.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here, Patsy.
Well, I introduced it earlier. I said to people, this is a big subject. Now, I don't get a lot of really historians or people who really know a subject as in-depth as you do, but it is such an important subject, and I wanted to have you on because there is so much going on in this world, and today we just heard that they might be moving tactical nukes. Where are we? What is happening in this world? And I hope that perhaps you can help my listeners to realize that they have to pay attention because we don't know what's going on.
There is so much, as you say, happening, and very few of us have firsthand experience. So we're depending on, for good and ill, other sources, usually news media, to bring us up to speed. And quite often, that messaging is filtered through agendas. And in a way, we could say everybody has their assumptions. And as the saying goes, sometimes the problem is not what we don't know, but what we know that just ain't so. And my purpose with the War Made Invisible book is really to try to cut through what's been called the fog of war and focus on what we can know, particularly if we are Americans, about our own government, what we've been doing in the last many decades for war or for peace.
Well, really, I'm going to put aside World War I and World War II, but we've been lied to since after World War II. We got into a mess in Korea because nobody reported and nobody told Americans what was going on there. Nobody knew in America that Stalin wanted a war in Korea. I mean, he wanted it to protect himself and to get things for himself. And nobody reported on it then. Then we headed off into Vietnam again, where nobody's reporting the truth about what was going on there. And it's just been an ongoing thing to the point where we get to Afghanistan, which I could have told all of them right from day one that we would lose that war, because all you had to do is go back and read in history about the Punjab Wars with the British, and you knew you were in trouble. But nobody reports it.
Well, I think you've made a really good overview of, unfortunately, a lot of history of the last many decades in terms of U.S. military intervention. One way I put it sometimes is that, unfortunately, the major U.S. media outlets, when it comes to foreign policy and wars, tint our window on the world red, white, and blue. And that might make us feel good, but it doesn't mean it has very much clarity to offer about what the heck's going on. And in the cases you cited, well, let's talk about Afghanistan. This is a very effective media system on the whole when it comes to U.S. military interventions overseas. And in my book, War Made Invisible, one of the reasons I use that title is that it's almost impossible at times for us to even see through this fog of media war what the underlying agendas and, so to speak, what the underlying truths really are. And so we're so dependent on the TV, the radio, the big media outlet networks, the ones that have behind them really billions of dollars in assets of a particular firm. When I looked at what happened, a pivotal moment, of course, 9/11 was a horrible tragedy. It was a crime of huge proportions. At the same time, a few weeks later, in October of 2001, the United States government compounded the tragedy by sending the bombers and the missiles and the U.S. troops into Afghanistan. And after 3,000 Americans had died, in the Twin Towers and at the Pentagon and in the field in Pennsylvania. Then many more were to die, Americans, and most, in terms of quantity, most of all, Afghans were to die. And I looked at a poll, Patsy, that really sort of blew my mind. In October of 2001, Gallup did a scientific survey of Americans, and the survey found that 90% of Americans wanted the U.S. military to attack Afghanistan, and 5% said they weren't sure. So what kind of a media system, and some would say propaganda system, functions when only 1 out of 20 people are opposed to the United States violating international law and attacking another country that really had zero of their citizens involved in 9/11? Not, and I'll sort of sum up this way, not one of the 19 9/11 hijackers were Afghans.
So on whose shoulder does this land? Because we have media who, as you said, they're all powerful, and yet nobody has educated the Americans of where even these countries are, let alone the history of these countries. And now we're faced with the Ukraine, which is an absolutely ridiculous war. And, you know, you hear about art historians when they have to date a possible masterpiece, and they analyze the paint and they say, oh, well, we know this isn't a masterpiece because, boy, oh, boy, we can see radiation that happened in 1945. Well, at the rate we're going, we're going to have radiation in 2023. And, boy, people are really going to be able to carbon date. And nobody seems to take this seriously.
Well, this is an issue that I did get into in War Made Invisible, because the ultimate invisible war would be a nuclear war. And yet, after the Russians did their terrible, horrible invasion of Ukraine, President Biden, and this is not a partisan issue, President Biden gave his first State of the Union address. And it was a very long one, and I read every word. Not one of those words referred to nuclear weapons, nuclear war, or the dangers of nuclear annihilation that were being brought closer to us because of the standoff and the confrontation, really, between the two nuclear superpowers, the United States and Russia. And that pretty much, with some rare exceptions, has been the reality from that day to this. We just don't hear about it. We don't hear about it from Democrats or Republicans in Congress, with rare exceptions. We don't hear it from the big TV networks. We're not hearing it from the prestigious newspapers and magazines. This is really another way to make not only current war, but the dangers of an ultimate war invisible to us.
Well, if you look at it, as I went back to the Korean War, because really that war, everybody likes to think it was a China, you know, war. But it was actually right there. Stalin wanted that war. Stalin wanted the Vietnamese war. So Stalin wanted all the Russians. You know, they've got a long reach. And we're still going on with this nonsense because nobody reports it. And the American people are, by and large, ignorant, completely ignorant. When I was a kid, I was telling my earlier listener today, he wrote a book about Bucharest, and he's from Bucharest, so he can write a spy book set in Bucharest. He knows Bucharest. But that's William Maz, and he wrote a very fine book about, you know, the situation there.
Yeah.
But if Americans don't know where any of these countries are, I mean, this... We had geography class when I was in third grade, and we knew where all of these countries were. I don't know where are you going to start informing people about the countries and the history of these countries?
Well, I think there is an assumption, often just tacit and sometimes explicit, whether Democrats or Republicans, we hear from presidents that the United States is the indispensable nation, that the United States is the exceptional country, and that conveys the idea that the United States is the center of the world and of the universe. And again, that might make us feel good, but the reality is, like it or not, we are 5% of the world's population. And there are a lot of other people in the world, and they have their own vantage points. And generally, those vantage points are neither more nor less valid than Americans are apt to have. And so in terms of history, yes, you know, Stalin was a tyrant, and the Korean War happened. He had passed away by the time of the U.S. direct intervention in Vietnam in the 1960s. But Vietnamese people generally didn't give a hoot about the Kremlin or the White House or anything else. They had their own lives, and they had their own suffering brought on them by the United States in huge quantities. And as has been the case after that, when people dissent in the United States and say, why are we attacking Vietnam? Why are we attacking Afghanistan? Why are we bombing and strafing and invading Iraq? We get called unpatriotic. And that's another way that there is huge messaging to tell us that these wars are good, and that the suffering from those wars, especially the suffering from those at the other end of U.S. military firepower, that suffering is rendered virtually invisible.
Well, now, the subtitle of your book is How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. But the same could be said for Russia and definitely for China. What they did... has not been reported. So
this is the nature, really, of governments, especially when they feel they have a stake in war or are involved. There's a great journalist who I mention and describe in this book, War Made Invisible. His name was I.F. Stone, and he said, all governments lie, and nothing they say should be believed. That's especially true in the case of war. As the saying goes, truth is the first casualty of war. And I.F. Stone was not saying that governments lie all the time. What he was saying is that governments often lie, and we should never take them on faith. We need facts, and we need true information. And that really was a motivation for me to spend years and years at the computer and reading and so forth, interviewing people for War Made Invisible.
Well, you know, when you look at it, I don't know who is going to do any reporting, because they just give us this fluff. They give us this fluff. For example, nobody knows, I'm sure very few people realize that a long time ago, as far back as John Kennedy, had seriously considered bombing the Chinese nuclear facilities, because he knew that someday they would be our biggest threat. And so we're not told anything about this. And I'm wondering, at which point, I mean, is it going to take somebody using, what's this idea that we can even report just sort of casually, oh, they're moving tactical nuclear weapons, but they're battlefield weapons, you know, they're just like right there. So like the nuclear carnage will be right there, on, you know, pinpointed to some battlefield, and not understand, it's going to be all over the place. It's going to be for the rest of the time that people exist. It's going to be in. I don't know how they can just report it without somebody stopping. Which reporter, which station, which person is going to get out there? Because obviously it's not coming from anybody. Our leadership in Washington, are they reading your book? I hope they're reading your book in Congress.
Well, I certainly hope so. We're offering, and I am talking, I have an appointment with one congressperson. I will hand the War Made Invisible to him. I think you're alluding to, you know, just such a crucial point that the casual discussion, if it's discussed at all, about so-called tactical nuclear weapons, let me be blunt here, that's insane. Because once you start to launch a nuclear war, when you have the United States and Russia armed to the teeth with thousands of nuclear weapons each, this is an invitation, a opening, and if the opening has gone through, a reality of what's been called omnicide. And I was very fortunate to interview for this book the great Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. And he pointed out that the best scientific studies are that with a full-blown nuclear war, which is predictably what would happen if a war with nuclear weapons started involving the United States and Russia, about 99% of the people on this planet would expire, largely because of what scientists have identified as nuclear winter, where the soot and the debris rising into the sky would not blow out, blow away, essentially. It would blot out the sun. And agriculture, within a few months, would be curt. And the scientific evidence now is about 99% of people on the planet would expire within a matter of months. So why are politicians and news media using diplomacy as a dirty word when there are suggestions that we need to have the U.S. government push for diplomacy with the Ukraine war? We're told that that's betrayal, that that's sellout, that we're siding with Vladimir Putin. No, and this is part of the theme of the book, that people who are stigmatized and trashed because they say they're alternatives to war, they are trying to, you know, like Cassandra, we are trying to say we must not head towards more and more destruction. There's such a thing as diplomacy. There are much better options.
And they better get this through their heads really fast. So if you're meeting people in Congress, tell them, you know, look back a little bit, read some history, and really learn what happened and where the... We hear this word disinformation, but there are people who are plotting bad things, and if you don't recognize it and then say, okay, you're right, you know, we have to solve this diplomatically. We have to just say, that's it. At some point, we have to say, that's it, because the more you arm, we give this, we give that, they give that, and it is going to result in the stupidity of a tactical weapon right on the battlefield. And a reporter was talking about it yesterday. Yeah, it's a battlefield. It's a battlefield weapon. Gee, you know, wherever you shoot off a nuclear weapon, that's a battlefield, all right.
Yeah, and the way that so many of the Pentagon-driven and White House and congressional-driven journalists are willing to be so flippant about it is really unhinged. You used a very important word, disinformation, and I would add to it another. There's one that has been cooked up called infotainment, where we're told it's information. It's really an effort to just entertain, bread and circuses, infotainment. And I have another word to add on to that, disinfotainment. We're being disinformed with disinfotainment. And we're supposed to have, in the United States, the informed consent of the governed. If we have the uninformed so-called consent, that's not democracy at all. And you used a very appropriate word for what we get so often in purportedly quality news media, and that is fluff. We don't get past history or current history, real-time history. We get fluff.
I bet I could take the whole bunch of White House and congressional reporters over there, and I could take them, and half of them wouldn't be able to find these countries that I could find when I was in third grade and I was drawing little maps of Europe, and I knew where the Ukraine was, for goodness sakes. I knew where Romania was. I knew where Poland was. nowadays, these people don't read history. They don't understand about what happened all the way back to the Korean War. You tell them Stalin wanted the war, they say, why would Stalin want the war? Yeah, they are not informed. And then the American people have such horrendously bad education nowadays. I don't know where we're going to have informed people to make decisions.
Well, you mentioned the lack of knowledge in history, and a lot of what is emphasized is how great America is and how bad our designated enemies are. Now, there are great and wonderful, admirable things about U.S. history, and there also are opposite realities of what the United States has done to people. The Vietnam War is a terrible example, but a very real one. And you're reminding me that just a few years ago, somebody who was more adept at presenting like some kind of Hollywood starlet, but was the White House press secretary. And she said, when she was asked a question by a reporter, well, what are the implications for the present day of the Cuban Missile Crisis? Her reply was, oh, I'm not familiar with the Cuban Missile Crisis. I'll have to look that up.
Well, the whole bunch of them. I'm telling you, they all need I don't know what will jolt them. Maybe if we have this tactical battlefield weapon, they might actually wake up and realize that we're in big trouble here. Because maybe they'll read your book, I hope, which is called War Made Invisible. Now, as you said, the subtitle is How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. As somebody who has lived overseas in a lot of these countries that we're talking about, I have been in the middle of revolutions, I have been in the middle of riots, I have been in the middle of terrorist actions, more than I can tell you. And two times, it was a U.S. Marine who saved my life. So, you know, yesterday was Flag Day, and I know, you know, there are other countries in this world, but in the end, I don't find any people who want to run off and move to Cambodia or run off and move to any of these other countries. Everybody wants to come here. So I hope that when you talk to the leaders that you're going to be talking to because of this book, that that is also taken into consideration.
Absolutely, that we have, like so many countries, we have a mixed history, and we ought to be proud of what we should be proud of, and also be honest about what has been wrong with our U.S. foreign policy and how we've got to make it much better.
Oh, and wrong with our military intelligence, because somehow military intelligence is like lacking. There is no intelligence. They don't understand these people. They don't understand where they're going. They don't understand the minds of the people in these countries they go to. And that's part of the big problem. As I said, if they'd understood the Afghanis, and if they would have read history, just the British history from the 1850s, they would have known what to expect.
Well, that would have been a much better outcome, to know what to expect by understanding history and the U.S. is not the center of the world, rather than the disaster that unfolded from arrogance and ignorance. You remind me, it's been said that the phrase military intelligence is so often an oxymoron. The joke is it's like jumbo shrimp, and we need to improve that too.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been a bit of a student of history since I started Latin, and I first translated Caesar's Gallic Wars. So I've put a lot of thought into it, and the biggest thing is that people have to know something about the world, and then perhaps they can make good decisions.
Absolutely, and the challenge is that and I think authors have a role to play here, if we can learn more and dig deeper, we can create a better future for ourselves and the next generation.
And if we can somehow convince schools to teach phonics so that kids can actually read books, that would really be a big help, too.
Well, as an author and a reader, I say, let's encourage the reading of books so that we can not just have this attention span of about 3 minutes that is encouraged by the corporate media.
You're right. Exactly. That's what they do. Feed you little drop by drop until your mind is so convoluted you don't know what you're thinking anymore. Anyway, it was a pleasure to talk to you today. And it's Norman Solomon, War Made Invisible. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, you can go visit thenewpress.com. That's thenewpress.com. And that's our publisher. And they give you more details if you click on books about War Made Invisible.
And I hope that you're going to be getting on some of those talk shows and with those talking heads, and perhaps you can talk some sense into them. How about
that? I'll try.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Norman. Nice talking to you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and stay cool, and read a good book. Bye-bye.